This is Talking Clean with Irene, a podcast for anyone like me who wants to kick the toxins out of their life and live a more natural and sustainable lifestyle. Join me as I unpack how to live toxin-free with insights from scientists, doctors, the creators behind those beautiful organic brands we love, and other experts. I'm your host, Irene Falcone. Now, we all know about our global plastics crisis, especially when we go to the beach and we see all those bottles and packaging all over the side of the road, in the sand, and washing up in our waterways. We can see all of this with our own eyes, so we can really see how bad it is. But have you ever thought about the plastic that we can't see? I'm talking about those awful microplastics, tiny pieces which are only visible under a microscope. Now, they're becoming a huge problem and we can no longer ignore it. Now, part of the problem is our clothing, I hate to say. A lot of our clothes, especially fast fashion, don't even get me started on fast fashion, they can be made from synthetic fibres. According to one study, just a single fleece jacket could actually release up to 250,000 microfibres in just one simple load of washing. Those microfibres are going straight into our waterways and down into our food chain, ending up in our fish and our wildlife. In short, we could all be eating our own clothes. Yuck. Well, one woman has found a way to help stop this problem. That is Rachel Miller. She is the creator of the genius invention, the Coraball. Today, Rachel's here to get us all up to speed on the microplastics problem, exactly how her invention works, and what else we can do to really tackle this plastic crisis once and for all. Hi, Rachel. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I am going to ask you all about this Coraball, because I don't know very much about it at all, except for the fact you basically throw this ball into your washing machine and it captures all those awful microfibers and stops them from going down the drain and ending up in our tuna. Is that basically what this product does?
That is basically it. So it is designed to help anyone who wears and washes clothes, which is most people, help people fight the problem of microfiber pollution. The one thing I do want to say is it doesn't catch all of them. We don't have any solution that catches all of them yet, but it does help keep fibers from washing out your drain.
Okay, so I'd love to ask you how it works. And it's not just clothes, is it? Because I want to ask you, I've always wanted to know this question, those microfiber face wash pads that you use to clean your makeup off instead of using makeup remover. These companies keep contacting me at Nourish Life to stock them, but they're made from microfiber. Yep. So I was always confused as to whether or not they were really eco-friendly.
That is such a good question. Okay, so we can back it up a little bit and say any textile, whether it's clothing or bedding or curtains or little makeup pads, which I use as well, like for face wash, so I don't have to throw things away. Any of those are vulnerable, potentially vulnerable to break in the wash. And if those filaments, essentially, that make up the threads, they're fibers that are woven together, twisted or woven together, that make up the thread that you can see with your naked eye. So I am not necessarily zeroing in on something that is made of microfiber that you'd say like with a capital M, like a microfiber cleaning cloth or that. In fact, I've not seen any studies that say whether a microfiber textile that's already microfiber is more or less prone to shedding than our clothes that are made up of very long fibers but are breaking into microfibers. So I actually don't know, because I haven't seen any science about that yet. But what we're talking about here is any textile being vulnerable to breaking into little bits of microfiber, not just a microfiber cloth.
Just synthetics? Because wool and those things break off as well.
That is correct. any textile, every textile is potentially vulnerable to breaking. And there's so much that we still need to know about the problem to really, really drill down. I will say we know enough to know that stopping the problem as best as we can is absolutely worth the effort. There's interesting potential harm that can happen because of microfiber pollution. And it starts with our sea creatures. So there's two categories of harm that microfiber can cause our sea creatures. The first is physical. So that is that these fibers tend to ball up into tangles. And if you are a very small sea creature, like say a little bit of zooplankton, you're like the size of a grain of rice, and you swallow a fuzzball of this stuff, it could fill your little plankton belly with something that is not giving you any nutrition. And so there are creatures that could essentially starve with a full belly because of this microfiber. And there is the potential that any fiber, any man-made fiber, so naturally derived or synthetic, is potentially part of this physical part of the problem. Now, there's another part of the problem, and that's the chemical part. And this is why we and most people are looking a little harder at the synthetics, the plastics. A lot of our clothing is made of synthetic material, and we acknowledge that that is, in a lot of ways, what makes our clothing technical and helps us stay warm when it's very cold outside or cool when it's very hot outside. And so the dangers that synthetic fiber can cause have to do a little bit more with the chemicals. So not just chemicals that the fabrics are made of, a lot of those are potentially inert, but there's a relationship between marine-borne plastic and persistent organic pollutants. What happens, persistent organic pollutants are things like PCBs and DDT and flame retardants, and they can stick to marine-borne plastic. And then when a creature ingests that, it can unstick, and it's been found in the tissue, in the blood, in the skin, not just the bellies of the fish that eat this stuff. And there are also, if we go back to the naturally derived fibers, unless something is organic down to the dyes, there's also the potential for heavy metals that are related to dye setting, things like wrinkle releasers and optical brighteners, chemicals that we wouldn't want to drink. And those can be carried by fibers of all types into our public waterways. And so that's why the problem is really, when you say microfiber pollution, it is all inclusive unless you say, I want to work on synthetic microfiber pollution. The Korobol, by design, is addressing all man-made fibers. We are after any man-made fiber. I'd rather just keep it out of our fish bellies.
Okay. The biggest problem is man-made fibers. However, natural fibers are really also hurting our wildlife as well.
Potentially, yes.
Okay.
And it's a conundrum here because there's a lot of information that we still need to gain and to understand the magnitude of the harm that each of the types of microfiber can cause. So there's one type of harm that it causes physically, so it doesn't matter what it's made of. And then there's another type of harm that is related to, let's say, chemical issues, whether that's associated chemicals that come from the textile industry or associated chemicals that come from being microplastic in the ocean. And so those are two ways to think about it.
Okay, so the Korobol stops some of the man-made fibers going down the drain, but does it also then help stop the natural fibers also going down the drain? It must, because it collects pet hair as well, which are natural.
Exactly. Okay. So the Korobol was designed as what we call an equal opportunity fiber catcher.
It just stops everyone, everything.
It is meant to stop all the types. And there's an independent test that Chelsea Rockman and her team at the University of Toronto did that says that the Korobol can catch up to or an average of 26% of the fibers that would otherwise or could otherwise wash out your drain. And that was based on a test using fleece blankets. We would have gone to market at 10%. It may be that some people are listening to that and hear 26% and think that that's not enough.
Well, it's one third. And like if we're stopping, if everybody had a corable.
You nailed it. And this is, if you think about it, that this is a problem that is made up of a lot of little teensy tiny problems. Lots of little teeny tiny, you can't see them with the naked eye. Microfibers are making a big negative impact on our public waterways. And so we believe that a lot of little efforts by the community can make a big positive impact. And that, so you're exactly right. This is the case of what we call a lot of littles making a big.
And I think that's what everybody's doing now with climate change and everybody just doing their own little bit. We are starting to make a huge difference together, the whole world.
I think so too. Yeah.
All right. So can you tell me how it works then? Do you leave it in the machine?
Yes.
And then how often do you have to, you must have to clean it out?
Yes. So it's really easy. You don't have to change your washing habits and it will not affect how clean your clothes get. Your clothes will get just as clean as they always did. So you do everything normally. You throw the Coroball in the machine, you could do a little round the back or drop it in, whatever you're feeling, and it just cruises around with your clothes. One thing that is important, though, is we do warn people to separate out your delicates, because here's how it works. The design itself was inspired by the ocean. It was inspired by coral, because here's what we needed to do as a design challenge. We needed to get little tiny things from flowing water. And that was to say, we didn't want to put a little screen over the effluent pipe because these things are so small, they'll clog the screen. So without special pumps or some kind of cleaning mechanism, that just wasn't going to work quickly. It will work. And I have faith that there will be washing machines with excellent microfiber collectors in them, hopefully sooner than later. But we wanted to make an impact right away. And so we realized we needed to catch small things from flowing water. And coral does that. Coral, picture it, it's stuck to a rock. And yet it eats bits of plankton that are flowing by. And so when you get a coral ball in your hands, you'll see it looks kind of like a sea creature. And it has these coral-like stalks, but it's soft. And the fibers get stuck mechanically in and around these little cilia would be the sort of biological term if it were alive, but these little kind of nubs on the stalks. And that's why we do say that it's best to separate delicates, because we wouldn't want any of your camisole spaghetti straps or string bikinis.
We don't want the unmentionables to be caught.
We don't. We want to protect the unmentionables. And so that would be the only thing. And for a lot of us, if we listened to our mothers, which I didn't, but if we listened to our mothers, we'd be separating the delicates anyway. So that's the one thing that would be, just leave it out of your delicates load. But otherwise, drop it in. Now what you'll do is you'll just look at it every now and then. The important thing to remember is that we are trying to catch something that can't be seen with the naked eye. So you may not see anything right away. Some people do, and some people have taken a month or even more. And what we recommend is if you're not catching stuff very quickly, just leave it in, let it do its thing, let some hair wrap up in there, let it start to fill up, because once it starts to fill up a little, you'll get more and more. That's what we found, is that a slightly used one is a little more effective than a brand new clean coral.
Of course, because when they're going to attach to each other, aren't they, probably, and keep gathering. Okay.
Exactly. And so when you have fuzz balls or little tangles that are now big enough to see, you just pinch them out. So picture cleaning your hairbrush. It's exactly the same maneuver. You see stuff in your hairbrush, you kind of pinch it out. And for now, we'll have to throw it away. We are working really hard on finding people with the technology. Okay. Right now, that technology doesn't exist. So right now, it'll have to go in your trash bin.
So we put it in our trash.
Yep.
That's going to end up in landfill.
Yes.
So can you explain to me and for everybody listening, because this is the big question I get, how is it better being in landfill if it rains and that rain washes it down back into the waterways versus it just going down the drain?
Well, if you think of it going down the drain, it is potentially more available, or it, say bioavailable.
It makes logic sense that it's a direct food for the fish that way, and it's very unlikely that it's going to wash out of the landfill into the fish's mouth. Will you promise me that the second that you find out about a solution to deal with or recycle the lint from the dryer, just for those times when we must use a dryer, and of course the washing machine and all the fibers and things that we are collecting out of this corable, stopping them from going into the fish's mouths, you'll let me know as soon as we find that solution.
I promise. I promise that. And you know what will be awesome about that solution too is that solution will also let us handle the volume of textiles that would otherwise get landfilled, which is also a travesty.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone that listens to this show, it's my bugbear, fast fashion.
Yeah.
And there's all these fast fashion stores. I just hate fast fashion. I am just a really big believer in spending some good money on some good clothes and then just keep wearing them. We just need to do that. Just got to stop racing out and buying these $10 dresses that are 50% off. And, it makes me so angry.
I hear that. I'm with you. And if we can, you know, figure some of this out, I agree that in that case, it's the same kind of thing, isn't it? Seeing value in everything and saying, I'm going to put more into this and get more out of it and make it last. And it'll be beautiful the whole time it lasts.
Yes, and you're saving money. Even with kids' clothes, hand them down. Brothers, sisters, cousins, because they grow so quick. I've got 4 kids, so there's lots of hand-me-downs in my family.
Yes, that's awesome. That's awesome.
And you also know, a lot of washing.
exactly. And we're even doing, my best friend just sent me a box of sweaters. And so I'm going to pick my favorite sweaters and then I'm going to share them with my friends. And I know that when we're done with them for whatever reason, that they'll get passed on again. It's pretty fun, actually.
I think so too. I think it's fun. And I love the idea of wearing things that I've got this amazing jumper actually from the Sydney Swans, which is an AFL team in Australia. And it was given to me in 1982. And I just treasure this jumper and I just love it. It's so retro and things are special when you hang on to them.
They are. Is it doing well? Is it still intact?
It's completely intact. I think we've worn it. All the children have worn it to every single school, you know, dress up as an AFL player. But I love, you know, just, I mean, I've just put things away in plastic tubs in the attic.
Yeah.
And then I just love every year taking them down and going through them again. And it's like shopping.
Wearing a new thing. It is. It's shopping in your own closet. This conversation is one of the conversations that we wanted to inspire by launching the Coraball when we did. So if you think about it, the collective needs to move towards washing machines that stop more, that there's filters built in, just like there are dryer lint traps and things like that. But we knew that was going to take a long time. We knew we were at the leading edge of this problem, at least of the solutions of the problem. And we wanted to make an impact as fast as we can for one goal. And our second goal was to raise awareness, to inspire innovation from people with far more knowledge than us about the upstream side, which would be in textiles, about the downstream side, perhaps in wastewater treatment facilities, and to inspire people to think about their clothing and its longevity and its value, its positive value on your body and its negative value when it breaks up and it ends up in our waterways. So I appreciate what you're saying so much.
Yes, it's this conscious purchasing, conscious washing, the way we store our clothes and loving them rather than just, you know, racing out and getting something new and leaving them on the floor. And it's that whole conscious cycle. And when you're, when you're separating those, you know, it's again, you're separating the lingerie and then you're putting the core. Okay, so I've got a great idea then. If you're saying that we can get about a third of our fibres into the waterway from one ball, then can I stop 60% if I buy two balls?
I wish I could say that would work. It certainly is logical. So here's what we recommend as far as the number of core balls in your wash. If you have a big washing machine, we do recommend going to either two or three. The machine is big enough so that the two or three core balls all have their own zone and they all can sort of clean their own part of the water. We have not found a huge increase in catch rate using more than one in a very small washing machine. And I think it's because sometimes the second core ball gets stuck in the wake of the first. And so it doesn't really have new water to clean. So rule of thumb for us, small, especially front loader machine, use one. It balances cost with effectiveness. And bigger machines, it's certainly worth considering two or three.
Okay, fantastic. And how about the dryer? Could it catch the fibers on the clothes if we were using a dryer? And also, would it melt or could it even be used as a dry ball?
We are investigating that. So our early tests are a little inconclusive about whether it's catching fuzz in the dryer. Because it was designed to work in liquid water, we don't think it's been particularly effective in the dryer, but we're working on it. So it's safe. It will not melt in your dryer. When we were testing, I accidentally kind of forgot how many core balls we were testing and had thrown a couple in a dryer a few times. That made us realize we needed to pick a material that would be resilient in even the hottest of dryer settings. So it's safe. And we think that there's the potential that it does help as like a dryer ball. So that would be the kind of thing, like we use wool dryer balls as well, and they help aerate the clothes. It reduces drying time, which helps reduce energy use. So we're working on understanding that better.
If we've got one for the washing machine, hey, throw it into the dryer as well and see if it dries any quicker. Can't hurt.
It can't hurt. And, you know, what's cool is some of our partners here in the U.S. are bundling some products together to make a sustainable laundry package.
Oh, tell me about
that. So they're taking those, I think they're called soap nuts. So it's an alternative type of detergent, really low footprint. They're putting the core ball in there and then a pack of wool dryer balls. And those three products together can really help people lower their footprint when it's time for the laundry.
We actually also stock the tree nuts. They're amazing. They are grown organically. I think the ones we have are certified organic.
Cool.
And you just throw them in this little cotton bag into the machine and they actually foam up like soap, but they're actually completely natural. I actually licked one because I was so curious. Don't do that. It actually tastes like soap. You can't eat them.
Oh, I love your willingness to just go in and test products at that level.
I was researching. It was all in the name of research.
I love it. I will do many things for science as well. I'm right there with you.
Absolutely. This has been the most amazing learning experience for me. I have to ask you, the girls in the office have asked me to ask you about the Rosella Project. What is that?
Oh, I love that you asked about that. So Rosalia Project is a nonprofit, so an NGO that my husband and I started 10 years ago this month, and it's named after my great-grandmother, so the Rachel, the R, and my name is named after.
Oh, Rosalia Project.
It is our mission for the Rosalia Project is to protect the ocean and conserve a healthy, thriving marine ecosystem. And for the last 10 years, we have been primarily working on the problem of marine debris. And so there's lots of different types out there, but we have specifically focused on derelict fishing gear, which is the most harmful and scary, then consumer debris, which is extremely ubiquitous, obviously. That's like the chip bags and the straws and water bottles and stuff. And then we've also been working on microplastic, which is more ubiquitous, but you can't see it usually. And so it was in the course of our work with Rosalia Project in around 2013 that we learned, we did not discover, but we learned about the problem of microfiber pollution. And part of Rosalia Project's whole strategy is to use multiple angles to address the problem of marine debris and ocean trash. So we do cleanups, prevention through education, we embrace innovation and technology, and we do solutions-based research. And so part of combining all those strategies is to always be thinking about how the work that we're doing on the front end, so like the cleanup and the science, can lead to solutions so we don't have to do that anymore. And we learned about microfiber, and I bet you felt this way. You know when a problem just screams at you? It's not just whispering or speaking to you.
Yes.
A problem just screams. And that's how we felt about microfiber pollution. And our reaction to that was to say, we want to see if we can be part of the solution, if we can help people be part of what we know is going to be many solutions, but we can do that. And that's how the Coraball was born. It had forms before it was called the Coraball. But that's really the evolution and Rosalia Project's role. Now, the cool thing is that Rosalia Project is still going strong. We hired an executive director. We are doing expeditions. In fact, if your listeners want to be part of our expeditions, we have people on the boat from all over the world. The boat that I'm talking about is a 60-foot sailing research vessel for sailors. And so it made the most sense, not just from where our hearts are, but from a low footprint standpoint. And this boat, it's called American Promise. It is powered by a very efficient diesel engine because just the electric motor technology isn't ready for a boat this big. But our house power, so nav lights, charging phones and cameras and radar and all that solar, wind and hydropower. And we do other things like we eat vegetarian. We have partnerships all over the coast so we can hand our compost over. We have partnerships with great soap companies so we know that everything that goes overboard is safe.
Oh my goodness. That is amazing. I will link to the show notes on how anybody can jump on that boat. Except the girls in the office are going to want to do this. I'm going to lose them.
Corporate. Well, you can come for just a week.
Yeah, okay. All right. I can't lose them for 6 months in the ocean.
No, I will not take them. And you know, the other cool thing is that because the Coraball was born from Rosalia Project, sales from the Coraball go back to support our work.
Wow. I love that so much.
Thank you. I can tell you about one more cool thing that we just did with Rosalia Project.
Yes, please.
So part of this whole thing is to both recognize that we are ready for action and to take action, but to also at the same time recognize that there are still gaps in knowledge and that our solutions can be even better if we understand a little bit more about this problem of, and I'm going to bust it out of microfiber to include all microplastics. So that's microplastic fragments, microplastics that were meant to be that small. So you'd call it a primary microplastic. That would be like the microbeads in face wash or resin pellets, which are the raw material for making plastic, as well as microfiber. So those are all things that make up microplastic. And we did a really cool expedition this year. And this is the type of expedition that people could join us on. We are funded by National Geographic Society. And we tested the air, the water, and the soil every 3 miles from Lake Tear the Clouds, high up in the Adirondack Mountains, where the Hudson River starts. And the Hudson River goes down south the length of New York State. And it goes right past Manhattan, right past New York City, and it meets the Atlantic Ocean at this light, a navigation buoy called Ambrose Light. And we tested the whole thing. And along the way, we also supported the field testing of some innovations that will help make microplastic science easier, faster, and more accessible. And so that's some of the work that we're doing with Rosalia Project. We even, on the way back, is we took some of that knowledge from doing real cutting edge science and we wove it into an education program with kids to help them understand what microplastic is and why it's important to prevent or to clean up, which is more of a challenge. And we're really excited about those solutions workshops, as well as the science that we're able to do on American Promise with partners and with people of all ages.
Wow. I love what you're doing. It's so much more. This is what I love so much about this podcast, is that I think to myself, I want to speak to you about understanding how to use this Corable, because I don't really know much about it. I know that it's going to, like when I started this conversation, I don't want to eat the microfibers in my tuna. And so I pick up the phone, we have this conversation, and then I learn so much more about the environment and then all of these other projects. And it's literally just I can't even think of a better way to start my day than conversations like this. My gosh, thank you so much. That's amazing.
Well, thank you. It's a beautiful and perfect way to end my day. speaking with someone who is so enthusiastic and we're on the same page. And I appreciate what you're doing is giving people the tools to live low footprint. Absolutely. Because it's not something that you can necessarily just do. There are some implements that are needed. And I love what you said about conscious consumerism and appreciating everything that we own. You know, we all need things. It's unrealistic to think that collectively we're all going to just stop buying objects. But I know that those objects can be done better and we can all value them more. And I love what you're doing to help people do that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for coming on the show. You have a beautiful evening. Lovely to talk to you. Bye-bye.
All right.
Thanks. Bye. Thanks for listening. This podcast is produced by Nourished Life, Australia's home of toxin-free shopping. To learn more and get all the show notes, visit us at nourishedlife.com.au. If you have any feedback about the show, you can reach me on Facebook or Instagram at Nourished Life, which is all one word. Don't forget to subscribe to Talking Clean with Irene in your podcast app. And finally, if you like what you hear, please give me a 5-star review. It really helps other people to find the show. I'm your host, Irene Falcone, and I'll speak to you next time.